Now, companies whose products we spend time on every day, like Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Instagram, they're paying attention to where we're clicking and what we're buying when we're online. Sometimes that means that advertisements that we see are more relevant to us. You might find something on an ad that you actually need and want to buy. But our next guest says these big technology companies are gaining control over us and our free market. We're buying things under the influence, and our decisions as consumers are being manipulated, sometimes even without our knowledge. Maya McGinnis is president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget and runs its program Capitalism, Technology, and the Economy. Her piece for the April issue of The Atlantic is called Capitalism's Addiction Problem. Maya, thanks a lot for joining us.
Oh, thanks. It's nice to be with you today.
Well, you've been on our network a lot over the years, Maya, usually talking about the federal budget, the deficit, the national debt. What steered your interest in this direction, the addictive power of technology and the impact it has on our free market?
Yeah, good question, because it's an odd path that got me here. And I should say that, of course, in the midst of all these, the huge thing that's going on in the country and the world right now, I realize it's not where everybody's mind is, but technology also is at the center of how we're dealing with what's going on now. So I'll pull those ideas together. But what happened for me is I've spent most of my career working on nonpartisan fiscal responsibility, the deficit and the debt. And it's always been a challenge. How do you get lawmakers and the public to focus on some of these harder, long-term issues that you don't see and feel every day, but are affecting all of us? And out of that, I've spent more time over the past years looking at what's going right in capitalism and what's going wrong. It's kind of a hot topic as people think about income inequality and mobility and those issues. And there's a lot of questions about whether capitalism's working. But as I thought about that and I looked at the experiences we as consumers are having with technology, I kind of went back to my basic economics and realized a lot of things about the business models of technology, which is to get us to use the products more and more in ways that are actually having more effects on our brains than most things. It's having more of effects on our cognitive abilities and dopamine, which is what loops people into these things, the more that's threatening how basic markets and capitalism work. So while we have a lot of issues with capitalism right now, is income inequality too high? Why is mobility so low? We can address all of those within capitalism. But some of the issues that are coming up with how we use our technology and how those business models work actually are going to make capitalism and markets much more difficult to function. And I just wanted to start ringing the warning bell about it, not because I'm anti-technology. I actually think technology is incredible and has the potential to unlock so many of the things we need to think about. But I want to make sure we're using it wisely and thoughtfully and don't go down any dangerous avenues about how it's affecting us and our overall economic system. So that's a long path of how I got here. But I think it's a really important topic for our leaders in the country and us as citizens to start having conversations about.
Let's take your argument a couple pieces at a time here. And let's start with the idea of being addicted to the internet, whether it's buying stuff or social media. This is something that people talk a lot about, but a lot of times it's, okay, if I am addicted to social media, that's a me problem. You say it goes beyond the individual and it's kind of built into the system. How so?
Well, addiction is a tricky topic, right? Because there are many things out there that some people get addicted to and other people don't. And there's always been a discussion of whether if you just exert enough willpower, you can overcome it. And I'm pretty sure there are a lot of us as parents who are home right now with our kids suffering with that general question of how do you make sure your kids aren't on their screens all day long? But the pull towards these things, it's bigger than just, oh, I like using something a lot or I'm somewhat dependent on it. There is an effect it has on our brains and more so on some people's than others. But what happens is technology, many of these programs are offering us really tremendous services, so much information, so much entertainment, so much connectivity. But we're building a lot of systems on them where we start getting dependent. And then we're using them more and more in ways that they are structured, and I'll go through how, where they are actually changing the dopamine rushes. And this is kind of the central piece of it, but the dopamine rushes we experience, where you start finding yourself twitching because you want to turn on your smartphone and see if you got any alerts or if your streak is going on Snapchat, all sorts of these different things that give us a little rush of excitement, even though if you take a step back and you realize, oh, somebody hearting your vacation picture is not really that exciting. But in the moment, you're kind of in that rabbit hole. It feels exciting. And so what's happening is it is structured in a way that is making us crave these machines more. It's taking more of our attention into these kind of isolated and many times frivolous experiences, so you don't really feel it at the moment. And it, what it's doing is detaching us from our families, our communities, our work. It's shortening our attention spans. And if you think that these smartphones and these platforms have been around for really just over a decade or so, and how much they've changed the way we live our lives. You know, you go through restaurants, when we are going to restaurants, you go out socially and you see people, their families on dates, actually on their phones instead of being with each other. People are sleeping with their phones. The vast majority of us, I include myself, they sleep with their phones. We touch them 2,000 to 3,000 times a day because it's an impulse on something that's basically an extension of ourselves. And for the addiction component, it's basically as though, and I'm borrowing this from somebody else's idea, but it's like they put a slot machine or a flask of whiskey in your pocket because it's right there. That addictive substance is basically an extension of yourself, which makes it all the more part of your daily living.
Maya McGinnis is with us from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, where she runs the Capitalism, Technology, and the Economy Project. She wrote about a piece called Capitalism's Addiction Problem for the April issue of The Atlantic. Maya, okay, I get it. Maybe this is a problem for people if they're spending too much time on their phones. How does this hurt the free market? How is this capitalism's problem?
Yeah, right. So there are basic principles of capitalism that if you've studied your Econ 101 class, you kind of know, which is you need free and open information so that both sides in any transaction have enough information. They decide whether to buy or sell something or enter a contract. They can decide that. You need to have freedom of choice, and you need to have competition within these areas. And a lot of things, as you become overly dependent or in many cases addicted to something, you no longer can say no. And one of the games that I play, and I'm not saying my dinner parties are fun, but one of my favorite dinner parties games is, how much would I have to pay you for you never to use your smartphone or social media again? And you go through it, you think about it, and you realize, oh my gosh, you know, that's enough money for a car or a vacation or my kid's college. Like, the numbers are really, really high because there's something. And the good part of it is that we value so much we couldn't give it up. But the bad part is we couldn't give it up. Like, there is now something that you are unable to give up. And it's not just the usefulness. It is the attachment to it of how it makes you feel. It's the panic that you feel when you can't find your phone. It's the anxiety that you feel when you don't have Wi-Fi. And it's the risky behavior that we engage in when you pick up your phone and you text when you're driving. I mean, you see all the typical behaviors of addicts that are coming in these situations. And it is a loss of choice. So what it means, the result is, one, we're willing to pay astronomical prices, though I'll return to this. We actually aren't charged them. One of the interesting things is we're given many of these products and services for free, and the way we pay is not in prices but in our data. But some of the threats to capitalism are the willingness to pay so much, the fact that these companies, because they track our movements, so much of our data and our information, the pricing then becomes tailor-made to us. You might be a really good discriminating driver of what is too much to pay for an Uber. And I might just be, whatever, it's on my credit card. I barely feel like it's real. I'll pay a ton of amounts for Uber. And we can start receiving different prices for Uber or different prices for Amazon and all sorts of things like that. And how the market used to work is that oftentimes when you buy something, you'd get it for less than you're willing to pay. That's the surplus. And you would get the surplus so consumers would come out better. Now that entire surplus is being wiped away and going to the companies that have more surveillance data, and that's going to be a big loss for consumers. And in the same way, we're being tracked on how frustrated and annoyed we get while we're waiting on service calls, or how many ads they show before we click off of something. And companies are now able to give us the worst service possible before they lose us as customers. So consumers are losing in both the pricing and the service areas of economics in some places, and the concern is that can keep on happening.
We're talking to Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She runs the program there, Capitalism, Technology, and the Economy. We're talking about her piece for the April issue of The Atlantic. It's called Capitalism's Addiction Problem. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think you are addicted to technology? Do you think people around you are addicted to technology? And do you think our use of technology is the fault in some ways of these big high-tech companies? Have you ever bought a product or spent more money on something because of targeted ads coming to you or algorithms? Do you think there's an imbalance of power because they know all the stuff that you do and you don't know what happens behind the scenes in what they do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation with Maya McGinnis. She's president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget and runs its program, Capitalism, Technology, and the Economy. Her piece for the April issue of The Atlantic is called Capitalism's Addiction Problem. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see this kind of technology addiction in your daily life, in your family, your coworkers, your kids? Do you feel manipulated sometimes, as our guest says, it happens behind the scenes in programming, to keep coming back, getting those rewards for the little blip that pops up on your screen on whatever your social media platform of choice is? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now. We'll start off with Jeff calling us from Superior. Jeff, hello.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you know, I want to share this. My life is pretty much an open book. I'm on Twitter and et cetera. And the way I feel about it is this. I'm almost 60 years old. Everything is there. I'm loyal to certain companies. I actually value my relationship with these companies because they collect data on me from 5, 10 years ago. They're able to tell me things that I've forgotten. And I see that as a positive. I don't see it as a negative. And I'm not afraid that they collect my data or what I'm doing. I'm entertained by it. And I value that as a relationship. I'll take my response off the air. Thank you.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Maya, Jeff feels like he's getting some good out of this.
Well, that's the perfect question, because this is not a black or white situation. This is not these companies are bad and they are doing bad things at all. The point I hope we start a discussion around is this is really nuanced. A lot of things are happening that we as consumers are not very aware of, and it's changing very, very, very quickly. And I want not a pause, but a like, let's stop and think and discuss this. So that's a great point about the upside of this, that there are entities that now actually have, they're better at tracking our history than we are. In some ways, technology is the new diary, right? People don't need to journal anymore because there's a tracking of it out there. And that's incredibly useful. And a lot of people also say, I mean, please, my life is an open book. I have nothing to hide. So why do I worry about it? But these issues of surveillance, knowing where everybody is at any moment, and I'm not saying, oh, it's because you need to hide where you are, but the notion that that power is being collected and, importantly, sold to people who we don't know, we have no say in that. So Jeff doesn't know who now has his data, and that data can be used in macro algorithms that actually track our behavior and then can push our behavior in one way or another to influence people. And the point I would make is not that it's bad, but that we need to have more sunlight shown on where it's going. We need to understand where it's going, how it's being used. And this applies to both technology and biotech areas. If you think about all these tests for people's DNA, incredibly helpful to have DNA and more ability through biotechnology to do research. And this is a moment where we're painfully aware of just how important that is. But you also need to know who has your medical data and who has the data of your whereabouts and who, when you give your retinal scans in the airport, who owns that data, who's using it, who it's being sold to. Because there is a lot of, we know, disinformation in these venues and sorting of sort of who gets what different information. And what you don't want is that powerful amount of information combined with AI to be used to manipulate people against their own will. So it's more about transparency than saying, oh, somebody having your data is bad. It's we need to know the full story. If consumers are going to have sort of all this openness, the companies also need to meet that with the same amount of openness about how the data is being used.
Jeff, thanks for calling in. We'll go now to Pepin us in Milwaukee. Pepin, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. What really worries me is the how available that data is for use in this cyber war that we find ourselves in. In particular, I'm worried about hostile foreign actors or even hostile domestic actors using that information to basically wage psychological warfare on the American populace. And, you know, I would really like to see Facebook and other companies really step up right now, or they need to just go away. They need to be dissolved, turned into multiple different companies or something.
Mm-hmm. Pepin, thanks for the call. First his concern and then maybe his solution there, Maya.
Yeah, well, it's a great point because right now is one of these moments where I believe we're seeing technology really step up and use its incredible resources, powers, connectivity, research capabilities to help in a moment of crisis. And so we know that this can be incredibly useful. At the same time, this is correct. The concern is correct, which is as these companies actually know more about our moods than we do, and they are more able to tell what triggers our mood. So if you have a smart TV that's able to track how you respond to humor, to violence, to sex, all of these things, you might not really be aware of it. You certainly didn't want some other company knowing about it. And that then means that things can be targeted towards you. Your mood can be affected by it. And again, I just want to point out, we're just at the very beginning of this. This technology has just been around for a tiny amount of time. But if you fast forward a few more decades, the immense power that will come with that will be tremendous. And so I agree. I think there's the real capacity for this to be done for good. And again, I think we're in a moment where we may be seeing a lot of good that comes out of it. But we have to be very concerned and protective about bad actors having access to that much data and that much ability to use it to manipulate people, to know things about people they didn't want shared or they didn't know about themselves, their economic preference. And again, the point of the article is their economic preferences, which was each individual's right to own, without that ability to make free choices and have different choices and have market clearing prices that apply to everybody, capitalism doesn't really work. So they're just profound shifts. They're profound decisions to make. And to his solution, it may be that these companies are too big. I think the dependency on single infrastructure sources that provide that much information and connectivity may well be dangerous. I think one of the things we're seeing in the moment we're in right now is an over-dependency on different structures, supply chains right now, can leave you vulnerable. And you at least want to have a few main choices for where you're going to get your information, where you're going to get your entertainment, what platforms you're going to be using. The network effect shows that for a platform to be useful, it needs to have a huge amount of users. And then that really makes any other platform that does the same area not as useful. That's why Facebook dominates the space it dominates in. And so there may be a benefit if we can't figure out how to work through these thorny issues, saying these companies need to be smaller and have competition.
Pepin, thanks for that call. As we get into our last couple of minutes, Maya, are there other regulatory steps you'd want to be taken here?
I think the first thing is transparency. We need to understand, because the new currency of the technology area is data, not dollars, we need to know everything about where the data is going. This can't be a one-sided transaction. The second thing here is we're going to need a new regulatory and legal framework for technology, because right now we have both law and regulations that are really for the last century, not this one, not the infotech century. And so things like having very strong requirements against disinformation is going to be critical. Things like passing along your data with individuals should own their own data. And if we decide to monetize it, individuals should have the benefit of that, not companies. They shouldn't be trading it away without knowing the value. And we all do it. The annoying boxes click up and they say, click if you agree. And nobody knows what they're agreeing to. And they sell their data because they just want to read what's being offered there. But we need to change the way that works. And ultimately, we may want to go back to a basic economic model where instead of giving away all of services and platforms for free and paying with our data, maybe we should pay with dollars. Maybe we should bring back the basic, you pay Facebook, you pay Instagram. It's great to have them free, but if anybody believes they're really free, they're kidding themselves. So first, we need transparency, and then second, we need new controls over some of the places where this may be getting out of control, and that really has to do with disinformation and how our data is shared.
20 seconds, Maya. Thoughts for us, people who use these services?
Let's discuss it. The thought right now is some of these things are problems, most of these things are opportunities, and all of this needs more discussion. And we all know we've gone through a massive change in how we interact with technology and what extent is part of our lives. In some ways, it's raising our children. It's a new member of our family, and we didn't really sign up for that. So let's take a pause, slow down, and have a discussion about how to use it productively. I actually think through this terrible crisis we're living through right now, we're going to come out with a new appreciation for both community and how technology can help us. And we can let those lessons start this discussion I think we need to have.
Maya, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks so much.
That's Maya McGinnis with the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget talking about technology, addiction, and capitalism.